Hello, friends. Welcome back to Destructo Discourse Good Time. This is a Dragon Ball GT rewatch podcast. I am your host, Jason. And joining me on the discourse this week is Dave.
Hello.
And Aaron.
Hello, hello.
And Melissa.
Hello, hello, hello.
How we feeling, gang?
About what?
Yeah, you're going to have to be a little more specific.
Glad to have this podcast. That's how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
The redeeming thing about these episodes is that I get to talk with my friends about them.
That's a great point.
Is how I feel.
This is so much.
Yeah, no, yeah. At no point in 2020 should someone go to another room and say, "So how are things?" Because then I'll need like
the answer.
Yeah, I'll need like one of those like psychologist couches that I can just kind of lay down and just sort of stare into space. It's a known issue.
Yeah.
So on this show, we done run out of Dragon Ball Z, wouldn't you know it? So we looked over across the street and went to Big Lots and picked us up some Dragon Ball GT. It's just as good.
We walked across the street in the bad part of town.
It's just as good.
Big Lots.
It's just as good as the name brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's the best way to think about DBZ ever. GT ever, I mean. It's the supermarket brand, Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball GT. We have food at home. So, we've been watching episodes of GT as we follow Goku, once again a child, along with Pan and Trunks, and their intergalactic adventure to recover the Black Star Dragon Balls before the Earth we know and love doesn't explode.
Oh, I forgot that was the stake.
Yeah, so I think the characters have too, honestly. No one's mentioned it in like five episodes.
That in mind as a precious amulet to remind me that there are stakes.
Yeah.
I know there are
stakes.
I have
a reason to watch this show.
I know something about this matters. In theory.
Yeah. I need to write that on a post-it note and put it next to wherever I'm watching.
Underline it three times.
Yeah.
It's that Homer Simpson do it for her poster, but it's just pictures of Dragon Ball characters we actually care about and want to see. It's just Piccolo and Vegeta.
Boy, I missed Piccolo this week. Like, I always miss Piccolo, but this one was...
Ooh. You're feeling it.
Yeah, if Piccolo was here, what would be different?
Everybody would have been thrown at a mountain and all of these problems would have been solved.
Everyone would have been everyone would have remembered that they have powers because they are, in fact, Saiyans.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that's an effect of the Black Star Dragon Balls? Like, you have a huge problem, and also we've taken away your knowledge of your ability to fix it?
That sounds like the kind of thing that someone would put in a fan fiction, and I would be like, oh, you're trying so hard, honey. It's not worth it.
You're trying to make it fix it?
Yeah, you're trying to fix it. It's not.
I've got a lot
it.
Of those this week.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
I challenged myself to find one thing I liked in every episode.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to this.
You guys are coming around to my here. Thinking, and I love it.
Oh, I don't like it. I like liking things.
Well, neither do I. I like liking things too, but they're making it very hard for me.
It's a challenge.
Anyway.
So before we get into it, there's a bit of a question I want to pose to the group here. We've been doing this whole... Destructo Discourse song and dance for a couple years now, and I think it's time for us to expand into a merchandising line. Some
Ooh,
products.
Yeah. Ooh.
So my question to the podcast guests tonight, pitch me on you yourself as an action figure.
Oh
my god.
What powers? What collectibles? What phrases are programmed into your sound chip and it's all compressed?
See,
oh
I was
goodness.
Thinking I was thinking more of like a Figma figure arts kind of.
Okay,
thing.
You were going like classy have, high art stuff.
Yeah, to have the swap out faces. So that there can be like the smiling, laughing face, and then like the crying on the couch face, and
the
then like
face.
Yeah, and then the like determined ring fit face, and would come with a sketchbook that purposefully doesn't open. It's a metaphor, and a wrist brace.
Oh, God. Oh boy. Yeah, does it come with a ring fit that, like, snaps into your hands?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, don't fuck around with that. That ring fit will mess you up.
Yeah, with skinny little arms. And then pet accessories as well.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my pitch.
I just had a horrifying idea.
Oh?
What if there were Funko Pops of us?
Oh. Don't the secret this. Don't speak that into the universe.
Well, I mean, the reality
Minus
is that
the
I...
the face I'm making right now, and it's just a big smile.
The reality is that the only reason I said that is so that I could personally kill Matt when he listens to this episode.
I would only sign that agreement if I got to be the only Funko Pop that has pupils. Otherwise, it's not happening.
Pushing the envelope.
Just making it not terrifying to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like pupils would be more terrifying.
there's no
piercing
is the future, is the reality, I mean. My action figure would come with a removable, like, Irish Farmer Hoggett cap accessory. Because that's my aesthetic. And it would have a pull string that when you pull it, it would generate a fanfic pitch.
How many preloaded...
I think ideally it would just have a whole bunch of different phrases and like names of characters, and you could just keep pulling it forever, and it would keep recombining them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you could, on the side of that, you could sell expansion packs.
Yeah, as we get to more episodes of the show,
mm-hmm.
and new characters are introduced.
DLC yeah. for your action figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would love to have a thing where, like, if someone actually writes one of the pitches that my action figure generates and sends it in to the podcast, they get a prize.
It's like sending your high score into Nintendo Power.
Exactly.
I would have... Okay, I just thought of this. Okay, what you do, it's kind of like a bigger, kind of like Funko proportions, but what you do is you can pop the head off and fill it with Play-Doh and then push it down and it grows a little mohawk hair of like whatever color Play-Doh you put in.
Oh, that's fun.
Ooh. What does this have to do with you? Like, it's awesome, but is this icon for your brand in any particular way?
Yeah, I have dyed hair mohawks when I get the chance. I haven't since COVID times.
Oh, okay.
But I just
now
have
awesome.
A mohawk that's just my regular hair, which is brown blonde.
Everyone's learning stuff this episode.
We're all learning today. Accessories that you could snap into my hands. My phone, probably. A can of Coke Zero, probably. If you press a button on my back, I'll just say, "Hi guys, sorry I'm late for the recording. Traffic was crazy."
It would say, "Sorry I'm late for the recording. Traffic was crazy." And then the other one would be, "Hold on, I'm gonna make a cup of tea."
God,
with dynamic tea break action.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh,
what a good phrase. I'm gonna cross stitch that.
Yeah, tea mug. Gotta have a tea mug.
Yeah,
that's a good little kitchen cross stitch.
I love that.
Mine would come with a, like, quote unquote bookshelf, which is just like
ostensibly a bookshelf.
A plastic thing with little rectangles on it, and then a book of stickers of things that can go in the bookshelf. And mostly the stickers are books, but then there's some like my little Vegeta and Goku figures that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an action figure that comes with action figures. for that action figure to play with.
Little pictures of action figures. And then the... And that's where all the money for the doll went. And the doll itself is just like a crudely rendered humanoid figure. You ever play with those dolls that, like, when you pull the string, they fall down?
Yeah.
Or wave their... Or you pull the string and they, like, wave their arms and you stop pulling the string and they fall down?
Yeah.
That's me.
I love the ones that ragdoll.
It's got a little smiley face drawn on it.
When you hit, like, when you hit the button on the base, they, like, ragdoll to the floor.
Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah, exactly.
Like goats.
Yeah, fainting goats. Yeah, same. Yeah, fainting same.
Goats. Just constantly doing an anime pratfall.
I love it.
So, these will now be available on Kickstarter. Nope, just kidding.
Don't curse us.
No. I didn't say the whole thing. We're free. We're free.
The other thing we should have, if we get really big, is we should have action figures and whatnot of characters that only exist in the podcast context. You know, like a Becky Hafford doll, Marin doll. Or no, Kathy yeah. Hafford is one we came up with, right?
One of them.
Yeah, some Hafford.
Yeah, ours all have to, by the way, they need to be that,
The Nation of Damnation, we also have to have them.
What was that toy, Skylanders, where you, yeah. there was like some, yes. like a smart base or something where you just, where you put us all over each of the smart base and it loads us into a downloadable app with in-game purchases.
I love those.
We're all loaded into a gacha game.
Yes.
Oh man. And then Ryan could play us.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's just really just works on every level, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Coming to a Toys R Us near you.
Oh.
Ouch. Too
soon. In Canada.
Oh, are they? Wait. Are they? Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
They're still in Canada. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Get
time
keys.
To plan a Canada road trip then. For next year.
See, sir, this is a global pandemic. What? Why are you coming to our country? Toys R Us?
The reason for visiting on the paperwork.
To aid your economy.
Yeah.
There we go. There we go. How else will I get my Dragon Ball GT Funko Pops?
Oh, boy.
So are we ready to talk about extant anime Dragon Ball GT?
Please.
Ready as we'll ever
as
be.
As ready
I think.
As I can be.
Yep.
We're watching all on Funimation now. Some of us are watching English, some of us are watching Japanese, some of us are watching both. And we're going over episodes 9, 10, 11, and 12. Episode 9 is Lord Lewd.
We really should have seen all of this coming.
We should have.
I wrote down that exact phrase in my notes.
And I just realized Tyler isn't here to give us the Japanese title, so I'm gonna just do that too.
Oh.
The Japanese title, by the way, roughly translates to, "No! Son Goku leaps into the planet of traps?"
You know what? That tells us something about what happens in the episode, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's also... I also... I don't know where you get your translations from, but I like that translation better than the subtitles that Funimation used.
And what does theirs say?
They used the word cripes.
Oh, well, no. What are you talking about? That's way better.
Cripes!
It's a million times better.
It goes, crikey, Son Goku!
Yeah.
So we last left off with our heroes successfully earning the Dragon Ball from the Dragon Quest planet with the catfish guy. Mm-hmm. But then
And Zelda.
And it flies into the hands of this blue weirdo in a red bodysuit who takes off in a mushroom.
It flies
ship.
Into the hands of a palette-swapped XCOM soldier.
Yeah.
The recap with Great Sandman's voice was trying really, really, really hard to be dramatic about what happened last time, mm-hmm. but the specific shot of the previous events that they picked was Tsunama going booty 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 and dancing. So it's they're doomed from the start.
Our heroes take after this blue weirdo. They tail him in the ship and they fly off into space.
Let's get Trunks this cool, insults. Like mushroom. Ship.
He insults the appearance of this ship, which, I don't know, it kind of looks like if the USS Enterprise had a love affair with a mushroom.
Yeah, it looks rad.
Kinda, yeah.
A lot of good
sci-fi
designs. It
doesn't look weirder than their ship.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It at least looks
which
like a spaceship.
Which is a nightmare spider.
Like, it looks like a, it looks like a, well, I was about to say it looks like a ship that was built by, like, a spacefaring, by a spacefaring culture, and their ship looks like, you know, a sleeker, fancier, like, Moonlander, and then I remember that completely fits with the technology levels of the two people involved, so you know what, no, fair enough.
They make their way into, like, hyperspace or something, the mushroom ship does. Mm-hmm. But not before we get a little, like, close-up as to who's piloting the ship, because it turns out the blue weirdo was not working alone.
Nope.
He's got other blue weirdos. Yeah, one is kind of like a skinny blue weirdo, and the other one is kind of like a squat, short blue weirdo with no nose.
It turns out that he's the Mo of the Blue Space Three Stooges.
Nor does the squat one have pants.
Oh, he doesn't?
I would like to note. Oh. No.
Love that.
No. Guy like bikini bottoms.
That's great.
So then a process begins. And so when I was working my way through the main series, like once we got into like the halfway point and beyond, and especially the last parts of the Blue Saga, I was like glued to my screen of like, what the fuck is happening? What show am I watching? where is this gonna go next? Like it was just hitting me in the face over and over again. And I gotta give it to Dragon Ball GT. That has happened pretty much every episode to me, mm-hmm. where I have just been slapped in the face with shock at what's happening on my screen. And that was this entire set of episodes. Like,
just shock and disbelief, and it gets weirder and not weirder.
Mostly not negative, just shock at what was happening. Because then these guys start talking, and they're from Space Jersey.
They are.
And they inform us that, you know, these Dragon Balls have to be the real deal because, and this is the line that is said, didn't Cardinal Moochie Moochie assure us of their power?
Yep.
And I just imagined the recording booth of the voice director being like, yes, sir, that is your line. That is what we're asking you to say.
And you are from Space Jersey, so,
yeah.
You know.
Cardinal
put
Moochie,
mucho jersey
Moochie.
On that Moochie.
What do these guys sound like in Japanese, Melissa? Like, is there an equivalent accent? Like, an equivalent part of Japan that they sound like they're from?
I just understood that literally they have jersey accents. No, I mean, they just say para at the end of all of their sentences.
they're a little Pokemon.
Yeah. Great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh. So it's like, hey, bon para, para. Like, they all just say...
Including when the last word of the sentence is para?
Yes.
Because their names are Bon Para, Don Para, and San Para.
Yeah.
Well, because a lot of the time in anime, like, they'll translate... Like, a character will have a dialect or a way of speaking.
Yeah, a lot
you know,
of times,
from,
like,
from a specific part of Japan, and they try to when the dub, they try to translate it to whatever kind of the equivalent thing,
right?
In
yeah,
that country's
culture.
There's no Kansai
accent here. There's just
exactly. Like I think doesn't Killua in Hunter x Hunter sound like he's, you know, like from the most delinquent, you know, part of Japanese subcultures?
That's Sailor Moon's best friend in the original dub.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right.
Hard accent,
and then the Deke dub gave us just like the, just such a just the longest of islands.
Yeah, because I was just wondering if there was. I mean, mostly I wanted to know if there is a Japanese equivalent of New Jersey.
I mean, yeah, I guess. Although it can be interpreted in different ways. I feel like any different dub directors, and translators take that in different ways. Because there's also like you can do like kind of thug talk.
Yeah.
That like I feel like Asuka from Evangelion gets that kind of translation work.
Yes.
A
lot of times.
Because she's brassy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She's brassy and she's not from here.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway.
So yeah, I'm just gonna for shortening purposes, I'll just call these guys the Para Para brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because are their names even mentioned again? Their individual names?
Like, every now and then, in passing. Not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... They talk to each other in the Japanese version. They say each other's names. Yeah.
Yeah. So they take off into hyperspace, and Trunks is doing his best, but the capsule ship cannot cannot beat their space hyper jumps.
Mushroom.
Yeah. They cannot beat the space shiitake.
He's not built for warp speed. Can't give it any more power.
Giving her all she's got, Captain!
Oh, there were so many times I wished this was Star Trek.
Yeah.
In the English, it gets into a fun little bit of banter because Pan starts dunking on Trunks's like engine capsule corp engineer. It's like, what do you pay these jokers? And Trunks is like, 8 figures plus benefits. What? And Pan's just like, no, you should pay them way less and not give them benefits. And the only note I had
until they can make a better ship.
Yeah. Until morale
That's
improves.
That's not how development works, Pan.
No, yeah.
Trunks is actually a good boss.
I think Trunks is a good CEO to his people.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
If the engineers are making 8 figures...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what Zenny is, but I would assume that's
great. Yeah, to be fair, but still.
So Trunks tries to tap into his inherited stunt flying power from his mother.
Yes.
And tries to steer us through a big asteroid field.
And does an incredible job, frankly. Right.
Does great for a bit.
Yes.
For a bit.
Until hubris takes its grim hold.
Until hubris take the wheel.
He invited that to happen. It has to be said. He invoked that last asteroid.
He had to brag, and then he crashed it. Mm-hmm. Well, not crash, but...
Well, they definitely got
clonked. A good bonk.
Yeah. A good spaceship bonk. So... We go back onto the Paris ship. Bon Paris enjoying a fine Bon Perignier.
What's with all these weird space wine glasses? Teresa had a weird one too.
Yeah.
Can't you just drink wine out of a normal glass? And why are you drinking wine on a spaceship? You got a pilot.
To them, that's a normal glass. Come on.
I guess.
They're always in space. When are they supposed to drink wine?
Maybe in space there's a wine glass swirl-based command console for interstellar travel. Maybe we don't.
That must be it.
Like, we don't know. He might be piloting it right now.
Fanfic premise number.
Great.
To reach the highest speeds, you have to make a comment about the bouquet.
Yep. Wine glass swirl. Starship control console. Excellent. Now that get kicked out by the action figure.
The Paras come up with a plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to lead the heroes into this asteroid planet called Planet Behay.
Now, to be clear, they don't come up with a plan. They ask the computer to come up with a plan.
Oh, that's right. The computer comes up.
And
yes,
the computer
Siri
comes up with
a plan.
Fucking hardcore plan.
She sure does.
Which
this
is,
computer is ruthless.
This computer is out for blood.
Yeah.
And basically, there is a bunch of spaceship-eating worms infesting this asteroid planet, and we're going to just bait the ship into the asteroid and just have the worms take care of it. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
That's how I take care of my problems.
Yeah.
Just feed it to worms.
a bit of trivia, looked it up real quick. Bihei's name is a flip of the Japanese word hebi, meaning snake.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's not a food pun.
No, it's a snake pun.
All right.
The main characters are the food.
Oh, that's true. You know, never mind. Asked and answered.
The crew follow the mushroom ship into the asteroid, and it's a big maze of caverns, and they're all searching everywhere, and somehow the mushroom ship hides behind some rock and loses them and then leaves the asteroid, letting them to be trapped and devoured by worms.
This is the thing I liked this episode, is how very good at being sneaky they were. I was impressed by it.
Mm-hmm. It's good. They rolled some good stealth checks.
They did that thing where you, like in Grand Theft Auto, when you pull into an alley and turn off your lights.
Ooh.
They just kind of backed into a little crevice and turned off their lights and waited for the main characters to pass, and then, you know, drove out the exit.
The computer confirms that, yep, those guys in that asteroid are totally gonna die. They have less than 1% chance of survival.
Never
I love that
odds.
At first, the even without factoring in the worms, they only had like a 50% chance of survival, mm-hmm. according to this computer. And then forgot to factor in the worms.
They plugged in worms into the equation and said 1%.
Solve for worms.
That's how, yeah, solve for worms. So they make a break for it and they head back to, I guess, their home base planet. We can call it that. Planet Lude. Planet Lude, spelled L-U-U-D.
Real quick, I didn't write this down, so I don't have it exactly, but I believe the percentage in the Japanese was 0.000012%.
Nice.
0.012%, you say?
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
So it was even bleaker.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
It's the dub rounded up.
Yeah, for posterity. after the commercial break, we're on Planet Lude. It's got a bunch of weird rock formations. They kind of look like the art from, like, old, like, what they thought, like, Planet Vegeta looked like back when, like, Saiyans were, like, cavemen who fought the Tuffles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of, like, you ever playing in the sand, make a drip castle?
Ooh.
You hold up the wet sand and let it just drip on itself and make a castle out of that.
Yeah.
That always looks so cool.
That makes sense. So we go into this weird inner chamber where we hear a lot of weird chanting. And I believe it is N-Yaka-Laka-Laka Lud Rama Lama Sama. Over yep. and over. And we see these, like, cultist guys wearing sort of beige brown robes and wearing these sort of, like, horned helmets with only their eyes showing. And they're kind of prostrating themselves before this big, large, like, stone statue thing of this kind of, like, four-armed gargoyle baby.
Well
put, yeah.
Just a real, with some real indigestion judging by its face.
Yeah. And it's, the gargoyle baby also has a giant, like, vase jar thing in its hands. That's important for later.
How do we feel about this cult fashion?
It's culty.
You know,
it's
as fine. Far as cult fashion goes, you think those are, like, scratchy
robes? They've got the headwear.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely sets up to, like, what cult fashion does, right? Like, it removes your identity, everyone's got the same, you know, uniform colors going. There's no, like, mouthpiece. You don't really see the eyes. So, yeah. Maybe that is another form of, like, cult obedience fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just spitballing here. What do you guys
think? No, I've seen stuff like that. Stories before, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's not as cool as, like, Circle of Thorns cultists, but at the same time, like, Circle of Thorns cultists in City of Heroes, they had, like, more agency.
More agency.
They could do fun spells.
That usually lends itself to more cool stuff.
They had a whole other thing going on.
They did.
I feel like that's
in our other podcast.
I feel like, also, we come to find out that these folks aren't, like, 110% in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like 80% in.
Yeah. They're
on a good day.
Exactly.
They're like, I want to be on the winning side of history, not mm-hmm. so much as I want to devote my existence to this.
Right.
I want to rule the galaxy.
I want to set the universe on fire.
We get to the front of the temple here where we have this sort of beveiled, cloaked wizard kind of guy. I just described him as looking like Aghanim from A Link to the Past, Legend of Zelda. He's got a whip by his side. He's whipping
kinda
it around.
Space wizards.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fun space. Now that's a cult uniform I could get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's very menacing. And it's established that this, in fact, is Cardinal Muchi Muchi.
It is, by the way, in Japanese, Muchi Mochi.
Muchi Mochi?
Is that better?
Okay. Oh.
I don't know.
Okay. The Japanese word for whip is Muchi, and Mochi is carry. So, whip. Wow. Cardinal carries a whip all the time.
That's some Harry Potter naming scheme right there. And I like Harry Potter names, but still.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose.
Oh boy.
Whip a little guy. On the Muchi Muchi.
I got a whip.
Muchi Muchi makes some demands of some poor sap about where the Dragon Ball is. The poor sap says, "Oh, sorry, can't find it. The galaxy's too big."
Yeah, I don't have a dragon radar, and you're asking me to search the whole ass galaxy.
Then what are you doing home?
Muchi Muchi does not like this news. He wraps the whip around the poor sap's neck, and he transforms into a doll.
I guess that happens. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. You have to try and mostly fail to roll with the punches of what's happening.
But don't forget, we have to save the Earth.
We do have to save the Earth.
There are stakes.
Don't forget. There's a reason.
For the love of God.
So, Muchi Muchi tosses the doll into that giant jar that the stone statue was holding. And the stone eyes glow. And this weird water hourglass thing by the side of the statue.
It's a magical soul bong.
Gets a little gurgle-urgle of water in it. It looks like it's almost about halfway there.
What a noble sacrifice this journeyman has made.
Uh-huh. Whoa. So, the Parapara brothers are a little freaked out by the time that they arrive to present the Dragon Ball to Muchi Muchi, but he acts really pleased.
He verifies that it's real instantaneously just by holding it.
I was expecting him to just bite it.
Yeah.
One of the Parapara brothers kissed it earlier, so it's not out of the question.
A good point. They think they're in the clear. They're like, "All right, please, Lu, we've pleased Muchi Muchi, we've pleased Lord Lude." And by the way, if that hasn't been established, Lord Lude is the giant stone statue thing.
Yes.
Muchi Muchi says, "I would be super proud of you, except for the fact that you stole this Dragon Ball from some Cretans, and they had another Dragon Ball on their ship, and you let them get away."
I know that somehow.
Well, because
divine decree.
Divine decree. Lude told me.
I guess
Lord
so.
Lude. So Cardinal Muchi Muchi threatens the brothers with his whip, and gives them one more chance to find that Dragon Ball. Get out of my sight.
See, this is a communication failure you could fix if you just, you know, hired some little messenger friends or something. I don't know. You just gotta tell people the information you have.
Mm. Yeah.
Use your words.
Use your words,
Cardinal. That sounds like a lot of work.
Dragon Ball GT, use your words. So the Parra brothers panic, get to their mushroom ship, and zoom out off into space. We cut to our idiot heroes flying through the asteroid, trying to find the Parra brothers, not finding a darn thing. And some creepy, crawly shadows start to slink up behind them.
Oh no!
They can't find the Dragon Ball, and they can't sense any energy. And then Pan abruptly says, "Hey, I have an idea! Let's use the thing we have that detects Dragon Balls to detect the Dragon Ball."
Ah, she's got her father's brains!
And to be fair, this is a time-honored DBZ tradition. Like, almost this exact thing was said at the beginning of the show.
So Giru can't find a dang thing. They are trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe it's like they're under so much rock or something. Maybe that's causing some interference. But then, oh no, the cavern starts to shake and the worms attack. These are worms that are like long and they've got like big shiny like cyclop bug eyes. Like a big red eye. Like they look like Metroid enemies.
Yeah.
They do. They've got
a bunch of little
spiky teeth.
Yeah.
Some spiky tail spikes.
It looks like they got eyelashes. So Trunks attempts to stunt fly away from the worms. The hatch opens. I'm like, okay, perfect. Goku's got this. He jumps out. All right, great. Pan jumps out. Okay. Trunks jumps out of the ship while it's flying. But then it's fine. It lands on its own.
Mm-hmm. Got a little palette.
And we end our episode with our heroes apparently getting outmatched by these space worms.
Very powerful space worms.
Why are these worms so strong?
These worms that I guess are canonically now stronger than Frieza.
And
now,
boo.
I'm going to be 100% fair. I understand why they're not using their full power here. If they did, it would probably destroy the planetoid. And yep. Then they would be in space and they would be dead.
Yeah.
So this time I'll give it to them.
Okay. Alright, no, that's fine. And we also end with the Parr brothers sneaking back into the asteroid and catching up with our crew.
I do think, you know, in saying that they're as strong as Frieza, it's just the big red spot on their forehead is as strong as Frieza. Because that's what they keep shooting at. And this is like an anti-Zelda game where you don't want to aim at the big glowing spot. Because that's apparently like the most armored spot that for some reason is the only place they can shoot these worms at.
Does anyone have any final thoughts for episode 9?
You know what? As ridiculous like comic sidekicks go, Giru is a lot better than Oolong. My whole perspective on Giru changed once I realized that we have Giru instead of Oolong and Master Roshi.
Yeah, I'd rather have Jar Jar Binks than horny Jar Jar Binks.
That's going on my quote list. Holy shit. Wow. My third eye just opened a little bit. From that
yeah.
one.
Good gravy. Episode 10 of Dragon Ball GT is Dance and Attack. The Japanese title of which, roughly translating to Dance Attack? Boom Shakalaka!
God.
The Japanese is Bon Papa.
That makes more sense, considering what we're about to...
These are very good titles this week.
Bon Papa!
They're very good titles this week.
Very strong. The episode starts by showing us, like, the last few minutes of the previous episode.
Just in case
you forgot, the gang surrounded by worms. They don't care about beans.
Oh no.
The Parapara brothers look for the Dragon Ball aboard the enemy ship, meaning our ship. They get frustrated at their lack of results. They can't find a single Dragon Ball anywhere on this thing.
Aw, they must have it on their person. Those rascals.
That's smart of them. We're mad about it.
I mean, that is a good conclusion to jump to.
Everybody in this show is simultaneously really dumb and also way smarter than anyone ever was in Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
They like flip-flop constantly between those two states.
Yeah, they catch on to... people catch on to things weirdly quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then they forget basic facts about everything.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Well, I mean, look, there's book smarts and there's street smarts.
Yes, that's true.
And not everybody has both.
And we cut back to Planet Lude, where Moochie Moochie is just continually commanding his followers to keep bowing and chanting and bowing and chanting.
Just keep doing that. You're doing great. Keep it up, gang.
Doing wonderful. They bring in some irregulars, they said?
Yeah.
And no explanation as to what that means.
My assumption is that these are just random people that were just captured some point. It was like a squid one. There's like one that looks kind of like a bee.
Yeah, random galactic personages.
Personages.
People who deviate from the cult standard.
Yeah. They didn't wear their robes were the wrong beige.
Yeah. Unacceptable.
Somebody
wore their mask at a jaunty angle.
There will be no jaunty ankles here. So Lude's eyes glow and beams start coming out of them, and they change all these poor fools to dolls, of which Moochie Moochie once again tosses into the doll cauldron.
There's more water in the spirit bong.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray.
The spirit bong is a very interesting concept. Put a pin in it, we'll have to come back. We're back at the worm fight, where the Pirate Brothers cheer on the Earthlings over the view screen. Goku hops on top of a worm and yanks his hair antenna for sliding down to the hole that it jumped out of and picked it up from the tail. And then he so long a worms it.
Yep.
Turns out worms are just like earth snakes.
Yeah.
This is my favorite quote from this episode. She goes, "These things are just like snakes on Earth." I'm like, yeah. You're actually right, because it's like, yeah, 30 feet long, massive. Yeah, that tracks.
One eye, shaking teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a snake. You just grab it by the tail, and then that's the correct place to grab a snake.
Snakes love that. Go ahead and do that anytime you get a chance. Don't do
it's
that.
It's totally safe.
Don't do that at all.
It isn't safe. Don't do that.
Don't do that. It's very
Leave
unsafe.
It to the professionals. Call wildlife control if you need to pick up a snake.
Yes. They find the snake-like weakness in these worms, and they pick them all up by the tails and tie them in knots and toss them at the wall, and for all intents and purposes, they have been defeated.
Why didn't getting tossed at the wall work before?
They weren't tossed at the right spot on the wall.
Yeah.
The wall's made out of special worm poison.
Ah, that old blunder. It's a classic blunder.
Vegeta would never make that mistake.
Never. This whole episode is the bug in the ground trick.
Yeah.
Because we have to go into the ground after the bugs.
It's a whole planetoid of bug in the ground trick.
Mm-hmm. So they recoup for a moment and are congratulated with a round of applause by the Power Power Brothers, who immediately demand that they give them their Dragon Ball, please. They do use their words. But they are at a bit of a standoff. Okay. Let me break down the scene real quick.
Oh,
so the Power Power Brothers, they rip off their armor, revealing some pink athletic crop tops.
Not before they start beatboxing, though.
They do also beatbox.
Oh, boy.
We hear it. Tss, 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 tss.
Something weird's going on here, and I don't like the sound of it.
But it's like one person does the and one person does the ts, and the third person just kind of chuckles rhythmically.
He just kind of giggles.
At first I thought he was gonna like try to make the giggling into part of the melody, but he doesn't. He just giggles.
Nope.
I mean, to be fair, that's what I would do if I was in that position.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, and we should establish that they introduced themselves as the Rhythmic Power Power Brothers and did a sound off in Sentai poses.
Yeah.
Did you like the Ginyu Force? We've added rhythm.
Yeah, and then we come and hardware. Because now we come to understand that their outfits are sound equipment.
Yes. So their armor, they sit down and their armor transforms into a sound system and a pair of spotlights. And then boom para para, boom para para, boom para para, boom pa pa.
Then they start rapping. It's very bad.
Is it rapping?
Unfortunately, yes, I think so.
It's the thing where you kind of... It's not even bad rapping. It's like you do... It's the worst thing where you're just imitating, like, African-American vernacular English and also bad rapping and just mm-hmm. making fun of everything. And
yeah.
It's, because
I've heard what Japanese hip-hop sounds like, and it's really good. This is not that. This is just very bad rapping.
I don't remember that in the Japanese version. Although, I should say that unfortunately, I missed a little bit of this setup, because I did doze off a little bit. I was in a very comfortable chair. And so basically, I fell asleep during Anacondas and woke up to Flashdance.
But you're wondering how we got in this situation.
Yeah.
Right.
From this point forward, which one is the leader, the big guy again?
Bonpara.
Yeah, at this from this point forward, the subtitles attribute all of his dialogue to DJ Para.
Great.
Which it actually is pretty great.
Yeah. I double checked in Japanese, and it was pretty. It's just pretty simple. They're doing these dances while this music is playing, and they're doing the
Cabbage Patch.
Basically, they're going right, left, turn around and smile.
Yeah.
And clap your hands.
The crew are just staring at this in like open mouthed horror, and Trunks just something about the way this line is delivered. He just mumbles like this is messed up.
Cha cha, real smooth.
Yeah.
The Bahara brothers try to like put in some lyrics into it where they're like, where one's going like, raise the cave, raise the cave. And one says, and I quote, we're gonna lay this one down real thick, like whole milk.
Why in the world are those guys dancing for us?
Yeah, this is messed up.
But they have no style.
Spin it right, spin it left. This crazy beat gonna make you deaf. Shake it, now shake it. Tricky.
Raise the cave! Raise!
We're gonna lay this one down real thick, like whole milk.
I'm glad you also so wrote that one down. It's really bad.
What? What Caucasians?
Yeah, that's the reality.
It's a lot, is what
and
I'm saying.
I wrote down as Penny Arcade would say, Trunks' mind is crucified by this by this display.
Yeah. It's not great. Giru unfortunately becomes enthralled by the groove. He cannot stop his dancing and shimmying.
Yeah, he's a slave to the beat.
It turns out, unfortunately, that Giru was the canary in the proverbial coal mine here.
Yeah,
as Pan starts to shimmy shake against her will, and then Trunks and Goku, and now the whole crew is just doing they're just doing the time warp.
Mm-hmm.
This is my nightmare.
Yeah,
force dancing.
This is like part of my nightmare. My nightmare is like accidentally inflicting forced dancing. I hope I've never done this to anyone.
Oh boy, this is a very specific power set.
Yeah, whenever I hear like the phrase inflicting forced dancing, I always just think about. God, what was it? It was either Deathly Hallows Part 1 or Part 2, the movie where Harry awkwardly goes up to Hermione and just, like, grabs her hands and just slowly shimmies side to side in a tent, and then they just do a stupid dance.
Well, that's also, like, a spell. It's, like, a curse at some point in Harry Potter, isn't it? They're, like, your legs just start dancing forever.
Oh, yeah, that's
probably.
True.
I forget who cast that at some point. I believe it is.
DJ Para.
Yeah, no, presumably.
Known Death Eater. Voldemort's loyal servant.
Oh no.
Sorry, I was just imagining a crossover fanfic. That's why we got quiet for a minute.
Ask and you shall receive.
Harry Potter GT.
That probably exists, honestly.
We've already looked for Harry Potter DBZ crossover fanfics, and those exist.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Death Eaters.
After our heroes are taken in by the beat, Bonpara stops dancing and then heads over to the crew and just starts beating the hell out of them.
Yeah, I remember saying at this point, like, what is the end game here? Like, what what is they actually going to do with this? And then it's like, no, I'm going to walk over and punch him.
It's yeah, the old Red Shoes gambit from the fairy tale. You just leave them to dance until they die.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I thought was going to happen.
But no, it's the red shoes, and also I'm going to hurl a brick at your head.
Yeah.
And also I'm going to go over to Pan and tell her to smile.
Yep. And, yeah. Pan has a bad day.
Pan has a very bad day in these episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't tell any Goku or Trunks to smile.
No.
It's at this point that, that I wrote down, Piccolo would have destroyed these idiots in 3 seconds.
Thank you. This is why,
Piccolo
when I
would
say
be
I need
immune
it,
to these beats.
Well, either it would, for one of two reasons.
He would rip off his ears.
I wrote down that exact
he's weak
thing.
To the
like,
beat.
Either he would rip off his ears, or he would just not stand for it, and he would just destroy them, like, as soon as they started dancing. Like, I'm done with this.
He knows his own weakness. He would stop it before it started.
Mm-hmm.
So I noted that this episode is all about reused assets.
Oh, really?
Because there are just a lot of reused shots of just, like, Goku shimmying, Trunks shimmying, Pan shimmying, the Barra Brothers shimmying, here's a close-up on the spotlight, here's the other spotlight, here's the sound system, there's the group shimmying again.
I guess it's a reasonable use for it.
And then it gets better, because they go for the final, they go for the coup de grace here by upping the tempo, which means we reuse the shots, but they just use the same frames and sped them up. And it looks weird.
It does. Goku makes a comment that this reminds him of Master Roshi's aerobics tapes.
Yeah!
God. Which I'm glad to finally get Goku's opinion on. He does not like them.
I'm glad it would be a
challenge for him.
I'm glad we all wrote down so many of the same things for this.
We are aligned.
Rising.
So it turns out that music started attracting some other visitors, namely the worms.
A terrible outcome ensued. The worms are also down with the beat.
I think the worms are immune to the groove, because they just sauntered up to Bompara.
They probably perceived through some other medium than sound, so they have no...
They perceive the groove as an invitation to mate.
Oh, dear. Very unfortunate.
No. Oh, no.
A terrible fate.
Terrible fate.
A terrible mate.
Oh! Hey!
So the Bonpara, I think Bonpara, when he realizes he is surrounded by bloodthirsty worms, he does a scream, and he turns into the Edvard Munch scream.
Yes.
For a minute.
He does.
Love that.
I didn't catch that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does. He definitely does.
This makes the music stop, so the crew are able to just get control back of their bodies and just knock everyone out in one hit.
And deal with the worms off-screen.
Off-screen, yeah. Don't worry about it.
All fine.
Don't even fret.
The crew turn over, they hit aboard the mushroom ship and start turning it over while Goku is outside and snacking on some giant bao buns. But they can't find a single Dragon Ball. So frustrating. Mm-hmm. But just as Pan's about to give up, a reading comes on in the ship's display. And Giru translates the reading as Destination Planet Lewd.
Oh no.
When's the departure time?
Now!
Oh shit!
The hatch closes, the ship goes into autopilot, and away go Pan and Giru.
Feel the read the instructions out loud gag.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
Time for some bonding for these two.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any thoughts for episode 10?
This is definitely somebody's, the whole dance fighting thing, definitely somebody's net ability, Hunter Hunter style.
It's probably mine.
Yeah, probably, actually. No, your net ability would involve T.
Okay.
Like you have to brew different kinds of tea to activate it. That would not be the most inconvenient way to activate a special power in that show.
I'll take your word for it. I need to watch that.
It's very good.
Episode 11 is Lord Lewd's Curse, the Japanese title of which roughly translating to Lewd's Curse? Pan becomes a doll!
Oh no!
So, yeah, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great. Let's All go right, on moving next on. Episode.
Episode 12.
No, that's a bad idea.
No, actually, yeah, let's just be done.
Let's start this episode for as long as we can.
Four-star reading.
This has been Destructive Discourse.
So Pan blasts off again. Pan keeps finding herself in spaceships that just launch without her realizing. Mm-hmm.
It's because she's the damsel and she's got to be in distress because of laws of the universe.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's gross. It will get worse. Don't worry.
Yeah. I was about to say, you haven't seen anything yet as far as gross goes.
No, I have seen it.
We have seen it.
I can still be upset. about yeah. smaller grossnesses.
Yeah, that's fair.
Gross, smaller grossnesses within the larger meta grossness. I think that's a Pokemon.
Yeah, probably.
Pan and Giru fall to the floor once the artificial gravity kicks in and there's shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Pan has already had it with Giru. Like, from the jump, she is just ready to turn this fool into scrap metal. Pan heads over to try and figure out the ship's console. Cannot make heads or tails of it. And then heads over to grab Giru to come figure it out. I made a note here that Giru struggles in Pan's arms like a cat being lifted into a carrier who does not like to be picked up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Just limbs just kind of spidering out in every which way. So Giru doesn't know any of this stuff. Like, can't read it. The only thing he can make heads or tails of is, here's a button.
Button located.
I've detected button a button identified. On this console.
Button identified, yeah, that's it.
So Pan smashes that like button and it activates the trapdoor.
You're a criminal.
Sorry.
Wrong button.
No, you're not.
Why do they even have that button?
I said the same thing! This episode, man! Wrong button! I like this though, because it's like, you know, he didn't say which button was detected. He just said he detected a button.
Just like, a button.
You have no bit. It's your own fault if you're disappointed in your Pan.
On your own heads be it.
Yeah.
So Trunks and Goku have they've begun interrogating the Power Brothers who have woken up. They were knocked out before. They're all tied up, by the way. That's important.
Yeah.
And they all attempt some bluff checks by working it into a rap.
Yeah, they try to gain power by which to lie to these guys by rapping, but it doesn't work because...
It doesn't... Well, it almost works. They're like, we don't know anything. We have no idea where that ship's going. But the youngest Para, the Son Para, is like, yeah, we don't know anything about that ship going to planet Luda. Oh, damn.
Son Para couldn't lie through the music. He has too much artistic integrity.
No.
The music is truth.
Yeah.
The music is truth. It's an expression of the heart. Mm-hmm.
It'll be wrong.
We cut to Planet Lude, where the mushroom ship lands, which gives me one of my favorite sight gags, because the ship lands and the cargo hatch opens and Pan gets dumped out with luggage.
Yeah. I like the animation of her, like, putting on the flying brakes at the last second before she slams into the ground.
Yeah. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Giru is helping himself to a little metal snack. With all
this was the thing I liked in this episode. It's Giru eating.
Giru eating is cute because he likes munching on ship parts.
Slurping up little wires like noodles.
Yeah.
He's got like one hole for noodles and then his whole half, like along his horizontal axis, opens up for if he's got a munch on a cell phone.
His Pokeball hinge.
I think One Hole for Noodles might be our episode title for this one.
Illegal.
You've done worse.
So Pan notices that the ships landed in this little valley with a bunch of little mushroom ships, just like the one she came from. And Giru picks up a Dragon Ball symbol. Or signal, I read it wrong. Yeah. They follow the signal for a little bit, and they leading up to like what looks to be a shrine or temple of some kind.
Pan says, "Pan, what the heck is that?" It's like, it's a weird looking tower, Pan. Like, that's what it is.
It's what it is, Pan. But the closer they get, the more Giru starts to freak out about the danger, danger, danger.
There's danger in that tower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Danger! Danger!
How can you be so sure there's danger in there? You haven't even been inside! Great! So tell me what it is I need to watch for!
Giru tries to burrow away from the problem. Does not work. And Pan ignores Giru's calls of danger and flies into the temple anyway.
Oh. Giru's worried about her.
Yeah.
Danger, Pan.
It's super sad because, like, when Pan is yelling at him, it's like, what danger? Tell me, tell me. Like, he can't. He doesn't know. He can just sense the danger, like, danger, danger! But when Pan's like, you're useless, I'm out of here, deuces, gear just does this, like, soft, like, danger, Pan.
Yeah.
Danger.
Pan respects her more than she respects him. Which is very sad, but also, also pretty great. Gear is a pure boy.
Lawful good. Lawful Giru.
Yes.
Oh.
Lawful Giru.
Well, he did eat the dragon radar. He's got a little bit of chaotic.
That's chaotic Giru, yeah, you're right.
Neutral Giru.
Mm-hmm. So Pan flies into the temple, comes upon this massive locked door with a large cartoonish padlock.
Love you those. Could bust open that padlock, Pan.
Easily she could.
Does she?
She does not.
Where's Piccolo, man?
She instead sneaks through a little like crack above the door, because it is a massive door.
Stealthy. That can be smart. Not yeah. making a big whoop.
And she passes this hallway with a bunch of other weird stone statues with jars, kind of like the Lord Lude statue, but they're all like cracked and worn and stuff. We cut to the central chamber of the temple where we get more of the Enyaka Laka Laka, etc. And it turns out Lord Lude apparently is very close to revival. Pan sneaks into the temple chamber where she spots the Dragon Ball and is caught almost instantly.
Well.
Ah, beans. So much for stealth.
I feel like that was a forced fail, though, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the GM fucking around.
That is DM magic.
No way right they there. Had guards up on that ledge.
On the one ledge with the crack in it? Like, no. They'd be down there, like, protecting the high priest or whatever. I've laid out boss encounters.
It's an abnormally high check to lead the narrative.
Yeah. We cut back to Trunks and Goku arriving on Lude, and the Power Brothers really do not want to go onto Lude. They're hanging onto the ship with their teeth.
Yes, hey, they literally.
I don't either.
I mean, yeah, even if I'd never been on this planet before, I wouldn't want to go onto a planet named Lude.
No. Not unless it was in South Galaxy.
Oh, God. I bet this is in South Galaxy.
Well, like, canonically, it has to be in North Galaxy, right? Because that's where the Black Stars go.
Yeah.
They can't leave the quadrant. So this is a planet...
So, like, toxic and unhealthy.
This is something
unlike
that...
Unlike South Galaxy, where they just are honest about all their lewdness.
Exactly.
Oh.
Do it in healthy ways.
South
See, yeah, like they should have tried to call King Kai at some point on this and be like, "Hey, what the fuck? Do you know about this place?
Is this filed down in your Rolodex?"
Also, he apparently like, he didn't like. I guess he wasn't concerned about this, so I assume these guys posed no actual threat.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just go back to Earth and just enjoy our remaining time?
Honestly, I was thinking about this, and the fix-it fix for it would just be go to Earth, enjoy the rest of your time, but then also go to planet Namek and just use the Namek Dragon Balls to unexplode the Earth.
Or use the Namek Dragon Balls to wish that the Black Star Dragon Balls were here.
Good point. You know what?
Yeah.
I've never seen someone going, hey, I wish these other Dragon Balls were gathered here.
Yeah.
I'll have to hit up Tyler and Matt and see if that shows up in Super or something. So, Trunks hits a button on the ship, which causes it to just electrocute and knocks the Power Brothers loose.
Why do you have concerning. That button?
Yeah, why did they
why
have
is
that
it on
lever?
The outside of the leg?
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's accessible from the outside. They're really, really nervous about failing Cardinal Moochie Moochie. Giru meets up with Trunks and warns that Pan is in danger, and danger.
Yep, danger is happening.
We cut to Pan absolutely not in danger and kicking everyone's ass thrice over.
Yeah, I really dig these like cultist knight guys
mm-hmm.
with their big great swords and beefier cult uniforms.
Yeah,
they do look cool. Their helmets have bigger horns.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're lieutenants and not minions.
Yes, exactly.
So, Yes, Pan kicks ass and then gets the Dragon Balls and then they go home and it's done.
All right, good job.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, she makes great use of the bad guy monologuing to just grab it and then get out of there.
She does. She stands off with Moochie Moochie, and then Moochie Moochie does a big old villain speech about how we're going to raise Lord Lude to life again to smite the unworthy and rule the universe, and in the middle of that, Pan just swipes the Dragon Ball and leaves.
Yeah.
But alas, she turns around to deliver her own monologue.
Yeah, you can't monologue the monologuer.
Rookie mistake.
Mm-hmm. Which, to be fair, she is a rookie. She's a youngster. Yeah.
I was about to say Vegeta would never have done this, and then I remembered who I was talking about.
But Vegeta has done this.
Yes, many times on screen.
The lewd statue glows, and a beam shoots out of its left eye and hits Pan, and she turns into a doll.
Yeah. This keeps happening.
Christ.
Also, a very weirdly specific Nen power.
Uh-huh. And the theme that we're going to be following here is it gets worse.
Yeah.
So the it gets worse is only is Pan a doll, but Pan is a doll that is conscious that she is a doll and can think in her monologue while
yeah,
a doll.
Yeah, now know that that's how this works. It's oh no.
And it's horrifying.
It's very bad.
Awful.
Absolute nightmare fuel.
And nope. We're not at the darkest yet.
Nope, we're not done getting worse. But we'll get there, unfortunately. So, Moochie Moochie is about to toss the Pan doll into the pot when Trunks and Goku burst in through the ceiling.
Yay! No stealth for them.
No, nope. Magnus rushes
in. When has
in.
Goku ever... Yeah.
Apparently Moochie Moochie knows what Saiyans are.
I was about to say that. Yeah, Moochie Moochie's very informed.
Maybe some bootleg copies of Raditz's diatribes got out into the universe after the Frieza Force got defeated.
The Raditz diatribes?
Or Raditz, his little audio thing of Piccolo. Piccolo's diatribes as he died and spilled all the beans.
Yeah, exactly.
Not our canonical.
Canonical.
Raditz podcasts.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you're right.
So what you mean to say is they got radicalized.
Whoa.
Hmm. So the Parra brothers get turned into dolls. Oops.
Well.
Oops.
They are trapped in forms that cannot dance.
True torture.
What a horror.
They're tossed into the cauldron and left to fuel Lord Lude.
Or whatever it is that's going on here.
Whatever is happening. Lude starts zapping around like...
of the Parra brothers.
Rest in Parra. Parra, Parra, Parra. The Lude statue starts zapping everything like crazy, but Trunks and Goku are too fast for it. Goku runs in on Moochie Moochie to lay the smack down after dodging a bunch of whip cracks, only to find that in Moochie Moochie's non-whip hand is a gun.
he just pulls out a gun.
This was amazing.
Yes.
It's a gun. It's this a gun that shoots beams.
Favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, the machine that has been effective since episode 1 of Dragon Ball Z.
It actually works, kind of.
It stings.
It does. And then here's my favorite bit from this episode. Gira warns, big danger ahead, big danger ahead, and this massive blue lion alien thing with massive fangs arrives, and he's super intimidating.
I'm ready for this big boss fight.
Yeah.
Mochi Mochi talks about it the way you talk about your Pokemon, like, oh, my Leon will defeat you.
He's dark type, and I raised him from EV training. And then Goku fires a beam at a bit of rock above the Leo, which cracks and crumbles and then crashes down on Leo and destroys it.
Yep. Goku does something actually smart.
Hmm.
At least it was just a robot, though.
Yeah.
No actual creatures.
He had a giant lion robot.
Yeah.
Like, let's not skip over that.
To let you know that this was a robot, we see a single gear rolling away towards a mysterious boot in the foreground.
I hate that boot.
It's a bad boot belongs to a bad man.
Let me give that boot the boot.
Pan calls out for help. That's dull. Gira runs past Pan, but not before accidentally stomping on her head. Pan is not into this.
That was bad, but
Pan
it was
Pan has
funny.
A brief moment of gentleness toward Giru, of like calling out, asking Giru to save her, but then once Giru steps on her, then she's back to just being yeah. ready to murder this poor robot.
Yeah.
God.
That was bad for Pan, but it was funny.
I agree. Giru realizes it's Pan, doubles back, is about to pick her up, and then the shadowy figure from the foreground appears, grabs the Pan doll, and kicks Giru away like a soccer ball. The poor guy.
What a dick.
I wish Giru could have just rescued Pan and this could have been their bonding.
I mean, if anything was going to make her...
each other as sentient beings.
If anything was going to make her turn around on him, it would be getting her out of this ship.
So the lion explodes out from under the rubble, which somehow causes Moochie Moochie to explode?
I think he just got caught in the blast.
He kind of swells and explodes and makes a horrifying, very funny face, as it were.
Though I think that, considering what we find out next, I don't think he was actually a person, really.
No.
So maybe his body, well, whatever his body is made of, his physical form reacted to the explosion somehow.
Must be. Mm-hmm. Because it turns out the whip remains and starts mocking the heroes.
The whip starts monologuing.
So weird.
It turns out Mochi Mochi was part of the whip the whole time.
Yeah, the whip is the real villain.
The whip starts transforming into a weird golden creature with like whip arms and like a Xeno head, like a Xenomorph head, and like crosshair eyes. Like,
I assume like this is one of the designs that Toriyama was responsible for in the brief time that he worked on this
show. I mean, it's freak-ass enough for that to make sense.
When specifically, he loves that specific design.
Yeah.
The Xenomorph style.
Yeah. And we conclude the episode with the unseen shadowy foreground person holding the Pan doll. Anyone have any final thoughts on episode 11?
I like the narrator in the in the intro referring to the Ponfara's dance technique as extremely bizarre. He's right.
It's true.
Okay. So, let's, before we get into episode 12, I'm just gonna put down just a generalized content warning for the content of this specific episode.
Yeah.
Because without going into spoilers, a lot of it involves this creepy older dude villain who is being pervy and creepy at Doll Pan.
Yes.
And it's very uncomfortable to watch.
It is
more
it
uncomfortable
is,
to recap.
Yeah, it is more it is worse than just the description might make it sound.
Yeah, it's bad. And if you don't want to deal with that, go ahead and skip like I don't know, 30 minutes or so. Maybe I'll dub in the actual time.
Yeah, we can put in a marker.
Yeah. But episode 12 is The Last Oracle of Lud, the Japanese title of which translates to The God's Oracle is a Serious Issue. Lud starts up.
I agree.
Yeah.
God's Oracle, very serious issue.
I do like an alternate translation that says it's super annoying.
Dang.
Dunking on him.
So we get to this golden idiot, the whip, the guy who was the whip and is now the alien whip guy. So to make things simple, his name is Moochie.
I do want to clarify, this is that's a dub thing.
Oh,
that
is it?
In the Japanese version, they are two separate entities.
Wait, what?
Oh, wow.
Fill
yes.
us in.
They are two separate entities, and Moochie the Whip was the master of Cardinal Moochie Mochi.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yes.
But his name still is Moochie.
Yes.
And he's, okay, the wiki page, the true leader of the Lud cult. Okay, gotcha. Okay. That's, I like that idea, though, of, like, the weapon is the true master here.
Yeah.
It's like Anubis from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I'm curious as to how that works. Do they, like, have talks at night?
Probably. That's about how fucked up this whole
I just kind of assume that, like,
tends to be.
The general, the Aghanim wizard guy was just a body puppet, like a weird double.
Nope.
Like,
it was
no...
a different thing.
Okay. That's strange.
That the whip was giving orders to.
Hmm.
Apparently.
So, Moochie laughs a bunch while the cultists in this chamber start fleeing and panicking, and he whips the ground a bunch, which causes a bunch of tiles and rocks to float up and start attacking Trunks and Goku.
He can control objects that he hits with the whip.
Thousands of them.
Yes. We get another genuinely cool fight sequence.
I don't mind it, yeah. I mean, there's so much of my, like, nitpicky, like, they could have solved this so easy because they're so powerful, stuff frothing up, but it kind of gets thrown down by the fact that I just like watching these idiots dodge tiles.
Yeah. If you just imagine that they aren't the idiots from DBZ, then it's really fun.
We're back to that.
They really aren't, fundamentally.
No.
Trunks charges up and blasts a bunch of tiles, but they still keep coming. They start piling on Trunks like a pyramid and try to crush him.
And he has to hold them up like a bodybuilder.
Moochie whips some swords on the wall to try and get Goku. Which,
this
again,
was, like,
blades are so dangerous to Saiyans.
He knows. Really, he's so well informed, so it makes sense.
Also, it's very unfortunate that Goku can be trapped by swords and has no way to instantly transmission himself away from the situation.
Perhaps a way to instantly transmit.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, he's
like,
he gets
to coin a phrase.
Trapped in a cage of swords. How unfortunate. What's that tarot card? Is it Eight of Swords?
It's the Eight of Swords, and I counted this was only six swords.
Ah! You guys, you didn't even get the swords right.
Come on, guys. Six of Swords is a totally different thing.
Moochie whips some braziers that combine into, like, a fire-spitting brazier monster thing.
This is wild.
That's a lot. Goku grabs a sword from his sword cage and slices the brazier in twain before challenging Moochie himself. Moochie whips the ground beneath Goku, which produces grabby hands that hold Goku in place, and Moochie beats the hell out of him.
Fantastic.
Goku remembers he can go Super Saiyan and does so.
Good job, Goku.
This keeps happening.
You did it.
Well done.
Did it.
A bit.
We cut to the mysterious ringleader figure watching the chaos unfold on a view screen while creepily petting the doll pan's face.
Like a cat.
It's very bad.
Not even like a, like, cause it's, the hand is like going over the face. Like,
okay.
Very,
not
like,
the way
consistently
you would pet a cat.
Too.
Don't
he's
pet a
do,
cat
he,
like
he's
that.
Doing all kinds of other stuff in this scene and he never stops.
Yeah.
With one hand.
He says, well, Moochie is done for. He can tell that this Goku kid is gonna mess up Moochie for sure. So we need to turn our attention to Lude. We don't have enough energy to fully resurrect Lude, but we have enough to, like, boot him up?
I guess.
Yeah. We have enough energy in this little doll, but I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to it.
One, I suppose that's a small mercy, I guess. Is it worth it? I don't know.
Mm-mm. So, this armored cult knight guy heads to the leader and says, there's intruders and they're tearing up everything and everything's awful.
This guy's dialogue is attributed to Believer A.
Yes, Believer A.
It got less funny to me once we started having other people later who are called, like, Believer B and C and D, but it's still pretty
Believer-a.
Good.
Believer-a.
Yeah.
The leader guy says, don't worry about everything. I've heard a final prophecy from Lord Lude, and he says that it's time to wake up soon. So get everyone into the temple, and we will witness the resurrection.
At this point, have we heard this guy's name yet?
Yes. Let us establish that his name is Master Daltaki.
Well, a little on the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Does this have any other significance in Japanese, or is his name just Doll Guy?
Basically, his name is like, it's also Daltaki in Japanese. It's a pun on his occupation, which is doll taker. Yeah. As a reference to otaki, which is another word for otaku.
That is actually great.
So, to establish, this is the creepy, curvy guy that we were talking about before. He's an otaku, and he is going to engage in some otaku tropes.
Yes.
That I don't like to see. Okay, so the cultists are all gathered. They're super excited to meet Master Daltaki because he hasn't appeared in years.
Who is apparently the actual, like, big shit in charge here, even though we haven't heard of him at all before now.
Yeah.
And he has, like, healing powers?
Yeah.
Or they think he does, anyway.
They're like, I'm going to make him ask to heal my leg.
Yeah.
I ask for wealth. I ask for fame. Yeah, they do a whole God Bless the Outcast moment.
Yeah, or something.
So Daltaki appears with Pandal in his pocket.
He says, now the need for an oracle will no longer be needed. I wonder if that was a lip-syncing necessity or something. Because that's very bad dialogue.
Yeah. So he's basically like, hey guys, loot is going to arrive soon. Everyone is going to sacrifice themselves into dolls to fuel the water bong to revive Lord Lude.
This is very weird and funny, because he says, the resurrection is complete, and Lude is going to return now, because it's done. We're done. We did it. And then he says, but we still have to finish it, so you all have to sacrifice your lives to it.
Yep.
It's like, wait a minute. That's not what you just said.
Hang on, then.
The crowd does a quick turnaround.
I also like that the believers figure out that this is a scam almost instantly.
Yeah, it's so weird. Okay, so it's very creepy to watch, like, a very silent, like, throne room chamber thing. The cultists are looking, like, not too happy about this, and then Lude's trying
to... This is what we signed up for.
Yeah, Daltaki's trying to put on the razzle-dazzle, be like, it's your bodies are mere shells that you must cast aside to live with Lude forever, da-da-da.
All that.
He holds out this, like, flashlight thing and hits a switch on it, which causes the statue to rumble jumble, and the cultists catch on real quick.
That's remote control!
Like, almost instantly, it's like, oh, he's controlling it. Lude isn't really a god, he's just like a machine thing. And Lude says, hey, you're right. You figured this out way too late. Bye!
I give these guys credit, at least.
Dollified.
Yep. The statue starts blasting everyone with doll beams, and everyone gets turned into dolls. Daltaki continues to be a weird creep at Pan. Trunks remembers he can go Super Saiyan and does so. He breaks that pyramid of tiles that was crushing him and flies off to help Goku, who's still squaring off with Muchi. Muchi and Super Saiyan Goku are fighting each other in the sky. He's getting whipped, and those whips have, like, electric zappies running through him. And Goku's about to lose to Muchi, but then Trunks blasts in out of nowhere.
Good going, Trunks.
And zaps Muchi to smithereens.
I did like how, like, Goku was, like, catching the whips on his arms.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to be hurting him that much. Like,
yeah, he was, like, kind of, like, grabbing them and, like, climbing up them.
Yeah, it was, like,
I think Muchi
who's
is
whipping
just,
the whipper?
I think Muchi is just good at, you know, outmaneuvering people and, like, overwhelming them with sheer number of attacks.
Yeah.
I do respect that these guys, like, I like everything in this episode a lot more than, what's his face with the muscle shirt from the previous arc?
Legic,
yeah, because Legic was just another DBZ guy, whereas these people are all more like Goldo, where they have like unusual methods of fighting.
That whole planet of Goldo.
That kind of except like awesome. So they kind of sidestep the
the quote-unquote power level scale, which I like that kind of
thing.
That
is true. It's a nice change of pace.
We cut back to the worst scene in this episode.
The worst scene in this entire franchise.
Probably.
We cut to an early season episode of Law & Order SVU, is what I would call
and
this.
We've been inside Majin Buu's tummy.
Yeah.
Just for scale.
Yeah.
So this is like pinnacle creepy Daltaki otaku being a creep on Pan. He puts Pan in the dollhouse and admits that he couldn't possibly toss Pan into the cauldron because he has a weakness for dolls that look like cute young little girls.
And he talks about how he wants to dress her up, and
that is, I feel like this, not that it's better, like not that it's good in the Japanese version, but I feel like it's not as bad in the Japanese version.
Yeah.
What did the sub say?
I didn't write it down exactly, but it was more just I wouldn't want to waste a doll that's so pretty, and he like puts her in the bed and then is like, oh, but like you shouldn't be wearing those drab clothes. So let me see like what I have.
Considering what he does at the end, I don't know if anything could make it better.
Sure, yeah. And at that point, Pan goes, oh no, he's an otaku.
Oh no! Pan called it like she saw it. So, I will admit, I do like the doll clothes being stored in a tiny doll-sized wardrobe, because that's a funny level of stupid.
Yeah. And then it's also very funny, at the end of this scene, what happens is not funny, obviously, because he goes to take clothes off, that's what happens. But she is spared from actually being stripped by the fact that apparently, despite being a guy who is obsessed with dolls, and dolls are his entire thing, he's very bad at taking clothes off of dolls. Because he just can't do it. Like, he fiddles with it for like 20 seconds. And then he is interrupted.
He's got some.
Yeah, I think he says in the Japanese, I think he says the belt is too tight or something.
Okay. Alright.
Okay, great.
Sure.
But yeah, he definitely makes a face that is not a face I ever need to see again.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's rough.
Yeah. And we're not gonna. We wish to neither sugarcoat it nor like get too into it, but like he picks out a fun outfit for Pan, which this breaks my heart because I love fashion. But I don't love fashion when it involves undressing and then redressing a non-consenting doll with the soul of a child trapped in it. That may just be me.
The whole time.
I just don't think that's a fun time.
That's a fair feeling to have.
So he's about to pull off Pan's shirt, but then the computers, thank God, start beeping and get his attention.
Thank you, computer.
Thank you, computer. The computers beep and say, I don't even know what they just kind of say that the doll cultists have all been absorbed into the cauldron, I think. We get to this, this is when we notice that, this is when we see that there's not enough energy to fully power up Lude, but there's enough to boot him up and get him walking around. And he says a really creepy line in English, which he says, if someone pushes me, I'll keep pushing back until they're dead.
Yeah.
Great candidate to rule the universe, this one.
Yeah. Frieza would not be having any of this guy's shit.
No. All this happened because we defeated Frieza. Now all these jerks
created a power vacuum.
The power vacuum. We got the power. We created a power vacuum that got filled by Daltaki. No. Every time I keep saying his name, I keep wanting to say Del Taco.
That's what he deserves. Just call him that.
Yeah. Approved.
Trunks and Goku enter the temple chamber after all the dolls have been absorbed, and they pick up the Dragon Ball. And then, ta-da, Del Taco appears and pulls out his flashlight and shines it at Lord Lude, who starts to rumble and shake. And a bunch
of... seems like it was designed to sell toys, but also it's, like, really shitty. So it's not like a magical girl wand that, like, has a neat design to it.
The flashlight thing?
Yeah,
yeah, remote
it
control.
Sucks.
It just kind of looks like the base of the Statue of Liberty torch.
Right, yeah.
It's just kind of nothing.
I kept thinking that there was going to be something more to it. But then nothing really.
Yeah.
It just kind of shined beams at the statue. That's just all it really is really for. So the episode ends with a bunch of glowing cracks along the statue to let us, the viewer, and the characters know that Lude has come to awaken.
Lude is in the house.
Luda.
Oh my god.
You're welcome.
This would be way better if it turned out that Lord Lude was secretly Ludacris. I'd be so here for that.
Does anyone have any final thoughts for episode 12?
Yeah.
It's over.
Yes, it's over.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously everything that happens here is very, very, very bad. But I do not think that it should not have been in the show, because I get the very clear impression that we are supposed to think that it is gross. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not, like, this is not like Master Roshi being like a goofy pervert. Like, between this and like, you know, he's an otaku, we're supposed to think he's horrible and pathetic. He's so consistently characterized as terrible and creepy the entire thing. Like, and combined with how, like sincere all the stuff that was fucked up on, like, the, you know, hyper-capitalist North Korea planet was, like, can't believe I'm saying this about Dragon Ball GT, but I am actually going to give them the benefit of the doubt on this kind of stuff. So it's like bad content, but it was supposed to be bad content, and therefore done, very well executed.
It was definitely not played for laughs, like Roshi.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like fair enough. All right, but I get what you're going.
But also,
here.
Like of all of the kinds of danger to put your damsel in, like if you have to have a damsel in distress, like just I don't know, hang her over a pit of lava like normal.
Yeah.
You don't have to like bring up all of the trauma that people have in real world.
It's not good.
Yeah. Or I mean even just like put her in the dollhouse and then stop there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Just be honestly it was established that these are bad behaviors that we don't like when he just put her in the dollhouse and just fawned over her, and that was it. Like, that's really all you needed to go.
And that would get across, like, that, like, it's creepy in the same way.
The fact that it went that step farther took it a level darker than I think this show has the infrastructure for.
That's a good way to put it. Like, it's almost like a structural problem where you're not gonna get into it any further beyond this.
Like, if this was a side plot on, like, some weird spin-off episode of Evangelion, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure, fine. Mm-hmm. But this is Dragon Ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree.
It's like, it's the sir, this is the Wendy's like, sir, this is Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
This is the fun shenanigans spin-off.
Yeah, especially considering that it's GT.
Like, right, it's all about the fun shenanigans.
It really is wild. Like, I don't understand what the fuck, like, the actual mission statement of this show is supposed to be. Because the entire reason that it exists, and that it is, like, mocking everything that we, like, had fun with, that we enjoyed and got invested in Dragon Ball Z, is to do, like, wacky, zany, fun, like, Dragon Ball-style shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And yet they keep trying to take on these, like, pretty legitimately heavy topics.
Yeah.
And the craziest thing is they do it pretty well most of the time. So at least so far
it's done well.
I feel like it's not they're not like taking it on, they're just doing it.
They're
just
gesturing.
That's a good distinction to make. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just mean it's not played for laughs. That's what I mean. And
fair.
I would have expected it to be played for laughs, and I give them credit for that. But I don't. I do not understand. Like, it is so bizarre that they keep trying to do this stuff in a show that is like so clearly supposed to be
the fun one.
The fun one. It is so weird.
Yeah. Let's hope there's more fun in episodes to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope this is the worst it gets.
I admit I would be surprised if it got worse than this, but I was surprised that this happened. So.
True. So, I wanna end on a lighter note. I have a question. This is a Hail Satan Marin Minute style question for all of y'all. So, we fail to establish this, but in the opening of Dragon Ball GT, we see Mr. Satan floating around in a fun little space outfit.
We do!
Oh my god.
And I want to know, what's he doing in space? What's that man doing in the outer space?
Is he looking for Marin?
He's heard legends.
Legends of the Hidden Marin.
He's on a journey to whatever cool planet she's hanging out on.
Maybe he's trying to find the Black Star Dragon Balls, but he doesn't have access to Capsule Corp tech, so he can just kind of go to where the moon was and look
he's
around,
just kind of
and that's
around.
That's as far as he can go. This is the finest spaceship money can buy!
He's enjoying the chance to fly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because that's what he wanted.
Unencumbered by Earth's gravitational embrace.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you, are you guys ready for a 4-star reading?
I'm so ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm.
Cleanse that palate.
At the end of each episode, what we like to do is take various Dragon Ball characters' birthdays based on their manga debut date and read for them a little horoscope. See what kind of fortunes we can divine for our heroes. And this week we got a newcomer. I haven't read this guy's 4-star reading since we've started, and I wanted to cover that ground this week. We are going to be talking about Giru.
Yeah.
Giru.
He's got a manga debut date of February 21st, 1996. So that would make him a Pisces.
Aww.
So yeah, Giru, here is your reading. Every time something ends, there are new beginnings. A spark of something to lead you in a new direction. Just because you've said goodbye doesn't mean it can't still inspire the future. Take the lessons you've learned and apply them to your newest relationship or business endeavor. Address any health concerns you have, either by changing up your routine or visit to a professional. Take care of yourself.
Watch out for danger.
Mm-hmm. Watch out for danger.
And stand up for yourself, man. You deserve it.
Giru, you're worth it.
Yeah.
That's about everything we got to talk about this week on Destructo Discourse Good Time. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate everyone who tunes in every week. Dave, where can we find you on the internet?
I am still Scythe, PSYTHE, on Archive of Our Own. I write fanfiction.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron?
I do this. I don't do much else on the internet, but sometimes I join in on Jason's streams.
Yes. Yeah. I stream on twitch.tv at jaycalves, jaycalves. And that's also where you'll find my Twitter and Instagram. It's the same name that goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And Melissa.
Hey. Christaya, all that stuff, socials are not my focus right now. But if I could just give a little shout out. I would like to encourage everyone to play the game Superliminal, because I did, and it was really great, and it's really fun puzzles, and a really, really sweet, really great message at the end that is, was very timely.
Aww.
Sweet.
I'll have to look into that.
It's available, it just came out on Switch recently.
Ooh, nice. You can email this podcast at destructodiscourse@gmail.com, and you can reach us on Twitter at destructo_disc. If you head to the pinned tweet at that Twitter, you can follow us to our Discord, the Destructo Discourse Discord, where you can hang out with us and talk about fun fan theories and send us all your Photoshops. Send me some Linkin Park AMVs with Vegeta in them.
Oh my god. Can you forward those to me?
I absolutely will. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, Google Play, anything you listen to it on, please, if you could, give us a review and a 4-star rating. Not 5. Don't get crazy. 4 stars.
To remind us of Gohan, because we miss him.
To remind us of better times and better shows.
In this dark realm.
Please, give us the Gohan. Have a heart.
Pretty please.
This has been Destructo Discourse, and we're having a good time?
We're trying. We're doing our best.
We're having a time.
We're having a time.
We're at, well, that much we're sure of. Don't you see?